Hi, Carm Capriotto here, and in just a bit, you'll hear some great podcasting moments, inspiring stories about development, training, and overall passion for the industry, a testament to the value we have for our industry's trainers.
We're not passing this on to the next generation yet. That concerns me, and you're right. Apathy's out there all over the place, from business owners to technicians.
Large scale.
We got to fix this, people. We got to fix this.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Hey, Carm here, and welcome to another special interview from Apex 2018. With me is Bob Greenwood, who is the president and CEO of Automotive Aftermarket eLearning Center, and trainer Eric Ziegler from Easy Diagnostics Solutions. This is some straight-up podcasting with hard-hitting talk about our industry's trainers. Do we appreciate them the way we should? Are they paid enough? Do we look at training as an expense or an investment? And many more great talking points here, like Eric and Bob can deliver. Many thanks to Federal Mogul Motor Parts for supporting the podcast. Looking for a hands-on, real-world technical training experience? Well, Garage Gurus offers on-site training in major markets across the country, providing the equipment, tools, and know-how needed to help keep your next job on track. Find out more at fmgarageGurus.com. Hey, have you had a chance to check out the monthly archive page on the website? You'll like how you can filter through all the episodes to find a special area of interest. Please check it out. Hey, again, in December 2018, I'm giving away a podcast collector's coffee mug and mouse pad. All you have to do is listen for the December password in this episode and enter it at remarkableresults.biz/swag. We picked three winners in November 2018, so get on board. Hey, now for a special treat, an interview with Bob Greenwood and Eric Ziegler. I was very lucky to have them in the Apex 2018 studio as they shared their take on training and making our industry better as it relates to appreciating our industry's trainers. Bob and Eric, an accomplished business coach and trainer, respectively, seem like an odd couple to talk about this, but you'll positively love the honest, transparent, and frank talk that we had. Bob wrote an article titled In Praise of Trainers in the magazine Auto Service World, and I believe you'll appreciate the way he and Eric bridge this topic. Find Eric and Bob's bios, links to their previous interviews, and the episode's talking points at remarkableresults.biz/E387. I promise nothing short of an amazing interview as you listen to learn just one thing. At Apex 2018, a warm welcome to Bob Greenwood from Automotive eLearning Center. Hi, Bob.
Hey, Carm.
Glad to have you here. And with me is Eric Ziegler. Nice to see you, Eric, from Easy Diagnostic Solutions and also with Automotive Seminars. You train with John Thornton, too?
I do.
How cool is that? And the Drivability Guys.
That's my other...
Scott Shotton. Hey, good to have you guys here.
Hi, Carm. Thanks for the invite.
We're here, like my little bubble here?
This is impressive, as usual.
This is just so cool. Well, Bob wrote an article a while back, and it was in Auto Service World, Bob. It was a great article, and since I subscribe to a lot of stuff, and you send me, everybody I've interviewed sends me articles that they write, and I really love to stay in touch with them and to listen and read what's going on with them and hear about the passion that they have for the industry. It came out in June of 2018, In Praise of Trainers. When I got that article, I think I printed it off the magazine, the PDF, and I put it in a folder, and I said that one day I'm going to sit down with Bob and talk about what he really means by In Praise of Trainers. And then we said, wouldn't it be cool if we could have Eric join us?
There's so many other people you could have had.
Yeah, but I'm sorry. Oh, yeah. So I don't want to... Well, Carm, why didn't you think of me? Actually, I thought of Eric because, hell, I saw you just a few weeks ago in Philly. So it was great to see you then. Bob, basically the impetus of the article says that we may be undervaluing the trainers that we have in our industry. And I want to just tell the audience, before we turn on the record button here, we had an incredibly interesting discussion about, really, what is the meaning of training and how do we look at the word training in our industry? Maybe it's time to think about it or change it. And I don't want to go there right now, but I just want everybody in the audience to know that no one's sitting on the sidelines just doing the same old thing. Everybody's trying to rethink how we can improve everything we do in our industry, and if you will, training. tell me, Bob, you just said the word, maybe it's all about being business developers.
Yeah, if you look at technical trainers and what they're doing, you look at business trainers and what they're doing, training to me is how to do one item, how to do one thing. And it's like, I'll teach you how to use a hammer. Pick it up this way, hit it this way, now you have been trained how to use it. But if you look at any technical training, you look at any business training, it isn't training. It's development. It's ongoing. And you have to move up to different levels of your knowledge, whether it be technical or business. And it's ongoing. That's why you have to have a business culture of learning. And the developers, whether they be technical or business, are going to be there to help you develop at every level as you move through your history of your business, keeping in touch with the industry. And that is why you see all the developers, whether they're technical or business, they're at Apex here, the good ones. They're here. They're absorbing information. They're staying in touch. They're seeing how the industry's developing. And now they go back and they do their homework. And now, how do I improve my own classes to make sure the students are being developed properly for the future of the aftermarket? Being developed today, not getting behind the wave. We got to stay in front of the wave. That's a lot of work.
He said the word culture, and we talk a lot on the show about culture of learning. Eric, you're out. You're never home. I feel
it's been a busy week.
Yeah. You've been just so busy. And when I think about you, I saw you teaching it in Philadelphia a few weeks ago. When you're in front of technicians, and most of them are technicians in your classes, maybe some owners, but mostly technicians.
Largely.
You bring your heart to the seminars, and I've always watched him engage with his students with his heart, and it's probably a great strategy to, you know, just to get them in the right, maybe uptake mode. Do you talk ever, or do you hear anyone say, you know, well, I'm so glad I came. I wish the shop had a culture of continual training and learning?
I would say yes, I have, to two or three points, to kind of, not to segue back, but to Bob's point, we don't see anybody that's just sitting on the sidelines. I think we're at an all-time high of technician apathy. I don't mean to be the buzzkill for our industry, but we have a hard time getting butts in seats. That being said, there is a culture of learning with some technicians and shop owners that see the real value in training and want to take things to the next level. And I kind of hearkened back to, you were at Jeremy's keynote at ASAPA when he said he'd fired the whole staff and was sitting there going, what am I doing? And the phone rang, and it was from a vendor. And he said, how you doing, Jeremy? And Jeremy said, what can I say? I'm living the dream. And he said, I realized I said it in a sarcastic tone. And the whole thing with his thing was like, I realized that change had to begin with me because I had to turn my shop around. And then he said the other thing was that my whole life I'd wanted to own a repair shop, whatever. So I realized the subtle change would be, and I've told this many times in the last 2 weeks since I heard that speech, because it resonated with me. Now he said, I changed the word living the dream, that I say sarcastically, to I'm living my dream. And I asked technicians, are you living your dream? If you're not, and you're looking at the end goal, like I'm just going to put a timing belt on, a ball joint on, for another 5 years I'm getting out, you are taking it very, and it's probably not for me to say, but you're taking up very valuable oxygen in the room. You know what I mean? That, like, we have done what we've always done in our industry, is that is adapt. We've had to adapt with technology. Now we're really having to adapt. And I think of the Mary Barra quote that said that you're going to see the technological revolution in the next 5 years is going to be cumulative of what we've seen in the last 50. That is huge. That is just like everything I've learned as a technician is going to be eclipsed in the next year and a half. That just boggles my mind. But
they call it disruption.
Yeah.
That's exactly what's going to happen.
It's a huge disruption.
Huge disruption.
But it's Darwinian. We're going to have to change. We're going to have to...
And you know, you look at what you're doing, Eric, and the time that you have to spend to stay on top of that kind of knowledge just blows me away. I know at my end, I am now at anywhere from 8 to 12 hours of development time for 1 hour of delivery. And people don't get that. They don't understand. How can that be? It's just, you're making PowerPoint slides, aren't you? That's a slam dunk. I don't think so. It's not that simple. It's far from it. This industry doesn't understand it. I look at the knowledge you have got to gain as these newer systems come out and the time you have to spend, and then the industry comes back and says, oh, by the way, can you do it on the other side of the country, a three-hour class, and can it be from 7 till 10 at night? Really? Think about that.
Yeah,
so we're affecting a lot of people, whether it's the technicians in class. They don't want to go to night class. Give them a life. They have a family. You know, we have got to organize our industry so that we can plan and develop training during the day and have blockout periods.
Yeah, I think development, like you said, is a continuum. It really is a continuum. It's not like you're going to do one thing and you get techs that go and they see a class or whatever. And, you know, sometimes you have technician apathy and they're like, oh, I didn't like him or I didn't like this. And, I mean, it's a dynamic thing. You said, like, I train from my heart or whatever. I've seen great technical trainers or whatever. I always relate back to the Lloyd Benson, Dan Quayle, you know, John F. Kennedy comment. I know great trainers. I'm not a great trainer. I'm just somebody who gets up and is anecdotal and can tell you about my life experience and where I'm at. I've seen the Manas, the Thorntons, the Ken Sanders, the Shottens. Those guys are great, phenomenal technician trainers or whatever. I have just been blessed to be. And a fire lit in me a long time ago when I wanted to leave the industry, and it all started the night Tim Hotelling with Automotive Seminars came to my shop and said, I got a great guy that you want to see. I saw JT for the first time. It was life-changing, yeah. Career-altering. I went to Vision. I went to Linder. And I've met so many fabulous friends, many people who are alumni that have been, you know, the great Harvey Chan, who we lost last year, who was a phenomenal mentor and inspiration. I know you're a fellow Vancouveran to many, many people. And it's the people that you meet. Yeah. And I try to make that personal connection with the people I train.
I'm talking with Mike Zralik, a technical product specialist with Federal Mogul Motor Parts. So you have this van, and it's the Guru on the Go van, and it's all nicely decked out, and you drop by for lunches and learns. How do shops get a chance to get that van to come to their place?
Well, they can, of course, call into our Guru hotline and request it. They can talk to their parts distributor, you know, and through that channel, we can go out and do some training, or even with us out in the field. You know, if they see us, we do various warehouse distributor type shows, many different events. We're out there everywhere. Just come by and ask, and we'll be more than happy to come by.
Hey, Mike, if I said you were a champion for Federal Mogul Motor Parts, would I be right?
You betcha.
So give me an example.
I live, eat, breathe Federal Mogul on a daily basis. You know, growing up, being in the racing industry, I knew a lot about Moog. I loved Moog. Felpro, same thing. To go out and be able to talk about a company this big, this strong, it makes me happy every single day. I'm so excited to do it on a day in and day out basis.
What are technicians saying after you're done with your presentation?
When can you come back? They want more day in and day out.
They want more, and you have more to give. You've got so many key product lines in the industry.
Oh, we have a ton of product lines and a ton of training that's available, you know, with those product lines and on a technical side too.
How dazzled are the techs to see that compression-loaded ball joint with the pre-installed integral dust boot?
They come unglued. They are so excited about that because less frustrations. You know, they've been dealing with issues in the field of damaging that boot during installation, and it makes it so much easier to put in. And it's a beautiful piece.
Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Gurus is your go-to source for the vehicle training, technology, and answers you need to keep your next job on track. On site, online, or on demand, the Gurus are here to help keep your business and your career on the road to success. Visit fmgarageguru.com. Carm here. In our December swag contest, the password is wisdom. Go to remarkableresults.biz/swag. Use the password wisdom and enter to win a collector's coffee mug and a mouse pad. The drawing will happen in the first week of January 2019.
Well, the reason that I said with heart is because I think because of your personality and who you are, it seems to me that there is a certain type of student that can say, wow, he's been there, he's done it, he cares about our industry, he cares about me being in this class, and they may just take on 10 or 12 more things that they wouldn't have if they didn't have that level of relationship. And so, however you feel your position or role in the industry is, I think you have an important one.
That's the passion he's bringing to the table, though, because he believes in what he's doing, and he also believes in the concept of sharing that information with the people in the same room. And you know very well that you're the type of person that's going to share as much knowledge as you can in the time you've got, and you will answer any question to the best of your ability, and you will take that time. You're not there to sell them one thing. You're there to share your knowledge. And that's passion. That is coming through because you're showing it. You're developing them. And you actually are, as an instructor, as a developer, a mentor of sort.
Yeah, we had a conversation just when we were off mic about things, but I like what you were saying about with the time that you have. The more sand that goes through the hourglass, I realize that we've lost a couple of great trainers. We lost Harvey Chan last year. Oh, yeah. We lost Dave DeCourcy 2 years ago. Phenomenal giants in our industry. So, like, again, like, are you taking up oxygen? The industry is, I've worked through some really tough times, as many people have in this industry that have been in 30-plus years. But one of the things is this industry has blessed me. And it's not only blessed me in a way that I had a technician that asked me in Waukegan after a class, like, looking at back on your career, if it wasn't monetarily, what is the biggest blessing you've had in the industry? And I said, bar none, it would have to be the people that I've met. Like,
and, you know, you bring up such an important point that we're still not talking about in this industry. We've lost some really good people. Who's your replacement? Who's my replacement? Who's Carm's replacement? Who's the next generation that's going to carry this on?
I don't see them. Probably the train by text guys.
I don't see them. I don't see people coming say, I want to do what you do. I want to learn everything about it. And you become a strong mentor. And I remember when I wanted to do this and I transitioned into it, I had a phenomenal mentor. And he worked with me a solid 5 years. Became a very close friend, obviously, but he was open and critical of how I do it and, you know, the processes to learn how to do it. And that kind of passion, we're not passing this on to the next generation yet. That concerns me. And you're right, apathy is out there all over the place, from business owners to technicians.
Large scale.
We got to fix this, people. We got to fix this. And we can't sit on our laurels and just sit and complain. Let's get off our butts and make something happen.
I'm often harkened back to my father and I had kind of an estranged relation, but, like, he worked for Caterpillar Tractor Company, and I can't really, my dad's been gone since the year 9/11, so 2001, and I remember him, the more time goes by, you wonder, like, what sage words of wisdom did dear old dad say or whatever, and I can remember being, like, very negative, like, 14, 15, 16-year-old person, and he had the back of a printed ad, and that it said in the back of it, and he pointed me, and he pointed at the ad. It was a Caterpillar ad. He was a Caterpillar tractor management guy, and he's like, this is what it's all about. And I never thought about it, but it was a one-page ad, and it said, in business as in life, there are no simple solutions, just intelligent choices. Caterpillar Tractor Company, trademark, circle. So, you know what I mean? And I harken back to that a lot. There are no simple solutions. There's no silver bullet to fixing what we do. Like, we're all going to go to one training class, and life's going to be great. It is a continuum. It's a development. It is ongoing. It is, like, for one shop, I ran into alumni Bill Nalu, introduced himself out in outside the booth here, and I said, oh, you're the six-day-a-week guy, thinking of the 6, 4, and 5 conversation I was in the airport at O'Hare waiting to go Super Saturday.
Oh, cool, yeah.
You know what I mean? He goes, albeit for me, you know, like, he was a first-generation immigrant. Like, he bought a business in Detroit with his brother, worked 80 hours a week, 7 days a week. He goes, I'm not the person to tell anybody they work 6 or 4 days a week. It's whatever works for you.
Right.
But, like, the whole conversation of, do you buy tools, do techs buy tools, you know, that John Bridgewater and Peter Rudolph, like, discussed on your show. You know, there's... You know, there's no one square peg to put it all in.
But thank you for bringing that up, because we are having intelligent discussions here. And, you know, after 475-plus episodes that are on in the library, I'm starting to ask myself, can we change,
3,000.
Can we change the world? Can we change the industry? Is the discussion moving people in a different direction? Can we have an impact? And I'm getting to the point where I wanted to get stories told, and now I'm almost at a point where we need to create change. And so many of the things I want to talk about, and I really do want to get back to a couple of key pointers here, guys. Pricing. I mean, some guys say, oh, go out and take the $150 class, not the $295. I mean, are people looking at what they're investing in training and Are we maybe pricing things wrong?
I believe they're looking at training like they look at the cost of parts. You know, it's ridiculous. If you look at development of what the instructor had to put in terms of time, and Eric's in the very same boat, I believe that a one-day class should be priced around $395 to $495 for the day per person. And there should be a minimum of 20 people in that class. But also, the instructor puts a maximum to it, because that instructor knows how to reach out and how many people they can deal with. Does that make sense, Eric?
It does make sense, and I would be all on board with that. Again, I think that, like, you can talk to not only curriculum developers, but like somebody like our handler with automotive seminars or whatever. Tim's full-time job is to book, you know, John and I in 20 cities across the country, and attendance is down. And, like, I think John Thornton's personally the best trainer in the industry, if not certainly one of a handful. Even John's numbers are down, because I think that, like, technicians generationally, either shops don't want to spend, and we are very affordable, and it's at night. And then, so maybe older technicians are either cost prohibitive from going if they're paying their own way, or maybe the shop doesn't want to engage in that expense. And millennials, younger technicians, they're wired a little bit different. They want to watch it online. They want to do online training, YouTube, something they can have on their phone while they're, you know, watching their kid's soccer game.
Is that the trend, though, that's hurting those attendance numbers?
I'm not sure. I don't know. I just know that, in general, you talk to Sandra at ATG, you talk to Tim, you talk to the only one that seems to have captured lightning, two people that I think of that captured lightning in a bottle, Sherry Hamilton at Vision, which grows every year, and she paid her dues. You know, they had low numbers for years. And Brenda and Jeff at Seattle ATE, I think, and they have capped theirs at like 650 or 700 people.
So,
like,
they can have
they turned away, because
right.
they don't want to move the venue. They
right.
turned away 100
right.
people, I want to say, last
right.
year. So you got to, it's like that good restaurant that you want to get a seat at, you got to have a reservation ahead of time. You got to be on the ball.
And
but
you know,
there's very few people that, like, are filling up seats in volume and doing a good job at it. I think it's a trend, but it's a scary trend, because Jim Lender years ago was the one who said it. Said the people that need training the most are the people that aren't here.
Right.
So
right.
you're attending training. You're preaching yeah. to the converted. Right. Everybody's there because they want to better themselves. It's their coworkers. Their, you know.
So if you're looking at a business owner, have they ever done an inventory of their staff in terms of knowledge and where they're at and where they should be? And the owner, the manager, is in charge of the culture of that shop.
Agreed.
As he said to you, Eric, look, you're at this level 3, and we need to get level 4. And I got your back. Do you want to get there? And if you say, well, I'm comfortable where I am, well, you know what? The bus door is open. I'm going to have to replace you, because we have to have a learning culture to be the very best that we can be, and we need you to get to level 4. And if you have that desire, I got your back. But if you don't have that desire, I can't take responsibility for your life anymore.
I would think that would be more an exception than the rule, but I applaud that. That would be a great thing. I think very progressive shop owners that have had, like, advice from yourself and Bill Haas and Jeremy and stuff like that, they get that. But I would think the gross number of people are fighting with, you know, Billy down the street, who will do it, will cut your throat by 20% to get the job. And the other thing we do as an industry that you know, I'm always amazed by, not to compare our industry to doctors or whatever. I always, like, bag on doctors when I have a surgical procedure done. I was telling them, like, technically, you guys only have to work on 2 models, right? They haven't changed in 10,000 years. We have to work on all this other stuff, right? But the one thing you never hear a doctor doing, I mean, they could cut off the wrong arm, and there would be they could ask the guy down the street and be like, well, he was, you know, prohibitively, you know, he was doing something that was preventative of the problem that could have spread from the real bad arm to the other. You know what I mean? We will, like, trash talk the guy down the street. The $14.95 oil changes the death of all of us, because we devalue our time. We don't charge for diagnostics. We don't attend training. We don't encourage our techs to train. We don't. And, like, Bob said something that really resonated with me, that most technicians, and I say it all the time, most technicians know very little what it takes to run a business, and a lot of business owners would be hard pressed to come in and put a modern day 3-chain timing chain on a, you know, multi-cam, multi-valve engine, right? So there's that disconnect. We're all in the same boat together. And I guess when you talk about passion, and, like, somebody told me, like, you're the Rodney King of training, like, can't we all get along? We have to, because it's symbiotic. Like, we have to have shop owners to provide a clean, safe business place for we as technicians to work. And as technicians, we have to be able to produce for our managers and our shop owners so they can make a profit to pay us a good wage, to pay our health care. And like Bob said, every shop should send their technicians to at least one management seminar so they get an idea of what the costs are involved to run a business. I think it's a great idea.
If we have a lack of competent techs, and I'm just throwing that out, I'm not saying I agree, disagree, or believe it, but you're out all the time training. Is it always the B's and A's in the class? And do you see the occasional young technician that whose owner has a plan, like Bob talks about? Our job is to get these words to resonate inside the industry and to say, thanks, Bob and Eric, for pushing me over the line. I've got to do this stuff because their experiences in the field, in the street, it's like behind the scenes with Eric, there's just not enough people here. Bob's out. What is it going to take maybe to push more people into these classes? And again, I'll throw another. I've asked you 10 questions here. Let me throw one more. What about daytime training? And the value that daytime brings. Pardon?
You've been talking to Bryn Klein. He's now an alumni. He's been a supporter of daytime for a long time.
Yeah, and it was on our panel at ASTE. We brought that up, and Chris Chesney was on the board, and he says, I'm all ready to move to total daytime. How many, there were, I don't know, 300 or 400 in the auditorium. And there were only a few that said, I've been there and done it. And then... Who would want to go to daytime? And a couple put up their hands and he says, I will make that happen for you. Yeah. Somebody's got to start.
Yeah. Every technician would be down with it. Every shop owner, a lot of shop owners would see the loss in product. They wouldn't be long-sighted enough to see, like, this is beneficial to me long-term. We have to change things. We have to change, like, there's no cookie-cutter model to doing all this training-wise as to running a business, but we have to be able to evolve with our industry. And I think that's a big part of it. Daytime training would be a big thing. I would be on board with it. Certainly make my nights a little, travel time a little bit easier.
From a professional point of view, we should be into daytime.
I would agree.
We got to be there. But also, we've got to be planning better. We should have block out dates. You know, every year when Apex takes place, you know, every year when a Vision takes place, you know, every year when LinderTech takes place, you know those dates. Why are you not already got your 2019 calendar blocked off? Exactly. Now that I know it's blocked off, who am I sending? Who's going to attend with me? Because the owner should be attending with the team. And I know shops that are closing down for the entire
week. I was going to say, I've met
and they're
shops
going to Vision. And they're the smart ones. They know that's an investment, that's not a cost. That's an investment. They'll be able to measure the return instantly when they get back. And the culture they're building as a team is strong. And that's where I believe in this culture thing so deeply, is that I look a business owner in the eye and say, do you truly believe that your team has your back? I'll look a technician in the eye. Do you truly believe this shop owner has your back? And you can tell right away when there's hesitation. That's a culture problem. I blame management for that because they're not communicating. They're not sharing information. And I totally agree with you, Eric, is that you have to work together all avenues of the business together. And you got to understand it together. And that's why technicians, office staff, service advisors should all know the business side and also attend classes on the technical side. You're a team. And believe me, a team is just not a group of people. A team is a group of people who trust one another. That's a team.
We spend a lot of hours together. In shops I've worked at, majority of my life I've worked in, I know this about myself while I'm self-employed, I don't traditionally play well with others in a shop environment. Some of the best shops that I've worked at, I spent a lot of time, majority of my time I worked in small 2-3 hole, garages. And I worked at a 2-hole shop with 3 technicians to where 2 guys were working on a car at the same time or 1 guy was running the front office. We each had our own bay. And like, you become almost like family. Like, you know every little idiosyncrasy of everybody's life and stuff like that. You spend an enormous amount of time together. You have to like one another in the end. And even if you agree to disagree, but you have to be team-oriented.
And respect to each other.
Yeah, but respect, also, that's a great word.
But also, consider this, is that a lot of shop owners, as you've mentioned and as we all agree to, are not investing in their business to develop their team, to develop themselves from a business perspective, technical perspective. So I'm very proactive on this end of it. If you're looking at going to a specific class of some sort, number one, get the agenda and study it. Are the topics going to be covered that you need to be covered for your business? If so, can I possibly talk to the instructor one-on-one just to confirm? And just have a quick 5-minute, 10-minute conversation with him over the phone just to be sure that this is the kind of class that I want to bring my guys to. We can't get the bums in the seats because they don't know really what it's all about. So we're going to add one more thing to it. If you've talked to me and we've agreed that those topics are going to be clearly covered and you will clearly understand them before you leave that class, and if that doesn't work, you got your money back. So we now have money back guarantees on any class that you go to. And that should be part of the culture of business development at the technical level. But the guy's got to understand what's going to be covered in that class.
I would agree with that to a degree, that the interpersonal connection, that's one of the things with, I've kind of been spitballing and formed a technician mentoring group in Phoenix, Arizona. And I think that mentoring is, I mean, you guys have done it for years on the management side, to where I have a gentleman at Motorworks in DeKalb, Marty Fay, who absolutely lives for his once-a-week conversation with Bill Haas. And Bill was gracious enough to have Scott Schott and myself at Automechanica. We went to dinner on it. And he was like, it's a big part of having that interpersonal relationship with somebody to mentor them, to help pull them up to the next level. And not only to be, this is where the whole mentoring thing came from, was Craig O'Neill and I were talking on the way to Vision. And he spoke so highly of Bob in such glowing terms. That like it had been, you know, business, you know, advancing for his transmission shop, but it had been life-changing for him because him and Bob had developed at a personal note. He waited around here for an hour just so he could see Bob and say hello. But I think that's that interpersonal connection and that, hey, I've got your back and we're not just going to be like, you're going to come see me, you know, in a class and hear me speak. But like if he gets to the point where you can have that mentor-mentoree, I think we can take things to the next level. I think it's another kind of spin on our industry. Yeah.
You just said something that you highlighted over about your mentoring group in Phoenix. I've never heard of this going on at the technician level.
It is a very pilot program. I got to credit Dave Denman from Dave's Car Care, who went to my very progressive shop owner in Glendale, and he had saw Scott and I teach at Vision and was very assertive and kind of in De Niro-like fashion, like said, you were coming to my shop to train my technicians. And it set in motion a great, I've been out there probably 10 times, I think Scott's been out there 3 or 4 times, and it actually came to when he had me like do this vetting for this he'll remain nameless employee that he was going to hire. And I had asked him 2 cliche questions. I said, where do you see yourself in 10 years? And where do you see yourself in 5 years? He said, in 10 years, I want to be working for the same shop. I've bounced around way too much. This gentleman's a Hispanic gentleman in his early 30s. And he said, in the next 5 years, he said, I want to be an ASC master tech. And Dave's kind of a larger than life kind of guy. And he looks at me and he goes, well, partner, you got enough time? Do I got enough money? Can we make him a master tech? And like, it just kind of this weird conversation with Harvey Chan at like,
but this
last year, the Bob Greenwood comments on the way to Vision kind of thing. It just set in place this thing. What if? What if, you know, technician mentoring could be a thing the same way shop mentoring is?
What if?
I think it's a home run.
I think it's a home run too.
It's got to be scalable, number one. What happens if, like, you know, I have 400 shops that want technician mentoring, then we have to have additional trainers and things like that.
Cloning will be out by then.
Yeah, but you remember multiplicity, right? Like, it's the subsequent models of Eric would be.
Yeah, but Eric, think about it. Think of maybe it goes back to the value proposition of trainers in our industry that, okay, think of how many mentoring groups exist in the business coaching world for business management. You just said it. And who says that each and every trainer in our industry forms themselves a 20 mentoring group with tech? Maybe it's not 20, but maybe a mentoring group that is manageable. And you are the one that's creating the training development plan for each individual because you can see it maybe even more clearer than the owner.
Yeah. So one of the things that, like, when I had my conversation, Scott Schott and myself had dinner with Bill Haas. He said, you have to find a metric that makes this, you know, that you can sell, because you obviously have to sell management on this idea, and you have to sell technicians on this idea that it's going to require, like, time. My personal model that we're doing now is we do hands-on one day. If I fly in Thursday night, we do hands-on on Friday. Saturday, we do a group of, you know, five or six sponsored shops on Saturday, and that's every 60 days. And then in the off month, like, maybe have a Facebook group that is a close group and have some kind of Zoom meeting and have that, you know, the once a month conversation. But the metric Bill came up with was warranty labor. And I always thought warranty labor, you know, being a technician, was, oh, I got a bad water pump. What does it cost me? And warranty labor is double. So warranty labor is non-billable time, and you have to double your warranty labor. So if you waste an hour on a car, not only did you waste an hour that you can't bill out, but you also lost an hour that you could have potentially been doing something else.
Yeah, you lost a profit on the first job. Any discussion inside of your business plan on this, on soft skills? We've all known that technicians speak car, and we want them to have a more human side, a more people side.
I haven't really got to that point yet. I mean, we're kind of on the technician side of things, but like in the other one, like at the shop in Glendale, each technician has their own toolbox. They don't bring in their toolboxes. The toolboxes are custom made, these beautiful Shure workstations. Each one of them has a telephone at it. The technicians are encouraged to contact the customer if there's any question about it, not like go to the service writer or, you know what I mean, like that. So that at a personal level, that kind of also develops that interpersonal relationships. And we're a rough and tumble lot for the most part.
Okay, how many do you have right now? Five?
How many what?
How many in your program right now? Five?
I think there's six shops total that are in our group, but we only have the Phoenix group started. Scott said he has had some serious inquiries in the DeKalb area where he's at. But again, this could be, you know, this could be something that could really blow up. This could be something that is a blip on a radar. But in the same way, it also allows me as a trainer to have that one-on-one time to establish that bond that the people, and it's patterned very much so from the management side, that they do that mentoring. They have that phone call where, like, that phone call's worth something, right? It's worth something to the, like, Marty Fay lives for his Bill Haas phone call. And at the same time, Bill does not have to jump on a plane in Plano, Texas and go to DeKalb. He will. And do drill down financials, as I'm sure as you do, and Chubby does, and Jeremy does, and all those guys. But to be able to leverage that technology to your benefit, to be able to have a Zoom meeting. You see the Train by Text guys do that every after-night, after-hour discussion thing, and they'll have 20 people on video chat. And you can cut down the miles that way and still have that interpersonal connection. You've got a problem card, social media, something like that. You can put Pico waveforms up. You could put snapshots up. Hey, and as a group collectively, instead of like the guy down the street's a hack, we're in this all together. And like, you know what? I had one of those last week. Did you check this?
As a trainer, is the Train by Tech's philosophy purpose, does it get in the way of what you do at all?
I've gotten a lot of questions regarding this. I think it's a little different. I don't think I'm kind of old school that way. One of the individuals with that group said, why is the old guard so resilient to doing YouTube videos, things of that nature? So, like, gentle,
resilient?
Resistant. I'm sorry. I'm a dyslexic individual, so I can trip over my tongue many times. But so, say, at Automotive Seminars, John and myself, we produce training videos, whatever, which they charge money for that training video. And while I applaud Bren and, you know, Mr. Perkins and, you know, all those guys for doing what they do, at a certain level, they're trying to better the industry, but it's free. It's the old, who's going to buy the cow when the milk is free, that my mom used to say so many years ago. But I applaud what they're doing in that regard. I think they reach out to another level. The other thing that, like, I think that you can't get from a video is that interpersonal relationship. Like, I like talking to people. I like engaging people. I had a fascinating girl. I had a female technician who was a female mobile technician, but not a mobile diagnostician. She, like, put hydraulic hoses on in loaders and worked on gensets and diesels and everything else. And she was this tiny little size 5 Puerto Rican girl. She was fascinating. She was in my class. She was one of the very most outspoken people who participated. And I thought, sister, you've come a long way in our industry, in a male-dominated industry. But we made that connection. I was like, when I'd ask her a question, I would see the kind of hesitation. I'm like, you've got this. And she would get the answer right, you know? It's all about the interpersonal thing. But I think the Train by Text guys, I think think Mr. Chesney's been snatching them up as quick as he can get them because he sees some lightning in a bottle there. And Brendan, those guys have great passion for
stuff.
They
have such a passion for this industry that I really do think it's going to set up them as trainers in our industry. Now, I want to challenge that word, Bob. I want to challenge the word trainer. And Eric's been just saying, trainers. What if Eric was saying the word instructor? Would that bring a better connotation to the value that our training brings to the industry?
It certainly would help. Instructor, developer. I compare the word training or the trainer right now to when a shop owner's called an installer. Like, that is just old terminology that doesn't apply anymore.
I guess it could be semantics to a certain level. I get the whole...
My instructor was Eric Ziegler.
I'm just a technician talking to technicians is what I see myself. Whatever. But I look at that as you can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep attending training. Come see me. If you didn't like what I did, tell me you didn't like what I did. If I inspired you to whatever, to step to the next level, like other people inspired me so many years ago, then it's beneficial.
In
you can call me whatever you want.
In automotive colleges, they're not trainers. They're instructors.
They're instructors.
And in many cases, you may be that much more skilled in your knowledge level.
I guess that could be the other level of it. I've never had high school auto mechanics, so I mean, I've had no formalized training as a technician.
So what's the incentive to become a trainer in our industry or instructor, however we want to split that? You said it earlier, who's getting ready to replace you? Okay, I understand. Maybe the train by text guys.
That's a bit tongue-in-cheek, but yeah, they're up and coming, for sure.
Maybe corporate training, too. I mean, let's not discount the fact that there's tons of great corporations out there.
Oh, absolutely. Ryan Coyman, those guys are doing a great job.
Listen, and I know those heads of those corporate training programs, and they have passion beyond belief to get it right, to hire the right people, put them through boot camps to find the right people. So there's tons of great training out there. If you and your organization, Bob, and you and yours are finding that the attendance is weak, so is corporate automotive aftermarket. We don't need any of this to go away. I guess the point of this whole dialogue is, if you're listening, you better have a plan.
Let me throw some weird thing out. It just came to me. It's outside of the box. It's stupid thinking. I know. But isn't it interesting the school system has a course if you want to be a teacher? You have to go and get your teacher's degree. And your mission is to become a good instructor as a teacher. So you go to teacher's college.
Right.
What if the whole industry had an instructor's college just to learn how to be a technical instructor and what topics, just to learn how to be a business instructor on topics? I'm just... throwing silly stuff out there.
Is the next level for John or Scott, for example, to be a instructor for instructors? And I know they're not here to answer that.
Oh,
but
I don't know. That would be your great white whale if you could ever get John Thornton. But I can probably tell you that's a tough interview. Or Mr. Manna.
No, it's not about the interview with John. But, it's about could they be leaving their legacy through the development of our future trainers? That's my point.
Yes. I think that you've had people like Chris Chesney, like Ryan Coyman, people like that are curriculum developers that like really have great passion for it, and that's what they do. Jim Wilson was standard, you know what I mean, was a great technician, good trainer, did some time in there, and now does nothing but curriculum development
but
stuff.
But, you know, I look at Mr. Thornton, I look at Mr. Chesney. Who's replacing these great people?
That's a tall order.
They have tremendous passion. They really believe, and they know this industry. I don't see somebody beside them, and who's coming up to there? Because God forbid if something happened to them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that we lose so much of, like, even as an industry, like Southern Illinois University, which is in my state, is one of like a handful of places that you can afford your baccalaureate in automotive repair or automotive science. And those people never go to work on cars. There's one individual that came out of that program that I know that works for my friend Kirk Holland at Gladney Mobile Solutions. most of those people with four-year degrees, they go to work for Gates, they go to work for Boeing, they go to work for Siemens, they go to work for, you know, GM or Ford, but they don't work on GM or Fords. They go to work in the engineering, they go to work for those. So we lose so many great educated people. And let's not kid ourselves. This is a tough industry. Mm-hmm. You got to do this because you love it. This is kind of like the, you know, join the Navy, see the world, whatever, like, you know, be in a bosun's chair, painting the side of an aircraft carrier while you're in Guam or something in 110 degree heat, right? And you think, I am living my dream, right? But I mean, that's one of the things that, like, I've never sought this out as a career. It's always done what came to me, like, almost like getting paid to sleep some days, like, you know, being a sleep study in college. Like, I was going to sleep anyway, and hey, I got a check. What a great career, right? But and there's times that I, you know, I think, oh my Lord, you know, if I hadn't been dyslexic, if I had paid better attention in school, I could have done whatever. But again, it's been I've been blessed by this career. I've been blessed by the people that I've met.
All right, guys, so let's try to wrap this up. And here's my thoughts to the listener. Don't let this discussion just be a discussion. Make this kind of an actionable motivator. I mean, find something in this discussion. We aren't here because we wanted to hear ourselves talk. We're here because we have a mission to change the industry, to change people, to improve our image, to create the commitment to be a forever student. So don't just say, hey, I listened to another show. Do something about it.
I often think of the old Chinese proverb, even the journey of 1,000 miles begins with one footstep, right? So make the footstep, I guess I would say.
And start getting together and in smaller groups and have this discussion. But make the effort. Don't just sit back and talk about it. We come to a conclusion. Maybe there's 8 shops, 10 shops that get together. Let's discuss this whole concept. Okay, we're just a group of 8 or 10. How could we make this work?
For everybody.
Exactly. You
know, just like
the continuum.
Just like it happened for you in your mentoring group. Eric, you're coming down. I'm going to find 5 or 6 more shops. Yeah. And what happened to the guy's business?
According to Dave, his metrics are up. I don't know the exact warranty claim numbers, but that's one of the things that it has to be profitable for a shop. I mean, a shop's not going to invest the time, and I think a lot of shop owners sometimes are afraid, if I train a tech and I give him too much knowledge, what happens when am I just training him for my competition? Is he going to go open up his own business? That's a risk you always have to be able to take and be realized that, like, good training is not an expense. It's an investment. It's an investment in your business. It's an investment in your future.
And you got to have that investment, and you can get around it these days even through a training bond. But that's your commitment of your people, your team to put that together. Yes, it's got to be a stepping process. But, you know, people say, you've heard it before over and over. What if I train him and he leaves? What if you don't need stays? Hello. It's a no-brainer. If you don't believe in your people, why did you hire them?
Exactly.
It's an old excuse.
It's an excuse.
Way old excuse.
Very
That's
old.
All it is. Hey, Eric Ziegler, Bob Greenwood, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Carl.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Eric.
It was a pleasure, Bob.
Hey, thank you, Bob Greenwood and Eric Ziegler, for your emphasis on training for our industry's technicians and shop owners. Our commitment to training needs to be at a higher level, and you offered us some great things to ponder and implement, so I suggest that you create an action plan around their talking points. In fact, the episode's key talking points can be found at remarkableresults.biz/E387. Hey, thanks for finding the time to listen and learn with the best context in the aftermarket. Nothing like listening to the emotion in the words. Enjoy the day, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.